75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
From Sunset Station in Las Vegas, Nevada, this is Jerry Pippin, the UFO Files, and we have Bill Hamilton with us. Great pleasure, Bill. I've talked to you on the phone many times. Great to meet you eye to eye.
Yes, it is.
The last time I talked to you, you said, I'm going to retire, and I said, no, you're not, and you said, yeah, I am, and I think you're in semi-retirement.
I am in semi-retirement.
Let's talk a little bit. I know you spent lunch with Linda Moulton Howe. And you guys had to be talking about something.
Well, Linda and I have known each other for a number of years, probably amounting to decades now. And I find that out of all of the other researchers that I know, Linda and I seem to be on parallel tracks. We have the same focus of interest. We seem to run across information that cross-correlates. And we're after kind of the same thing, and I feel that Linda is a very honest investigator, and I just can easily relate to her.
Yeah, I understand that, and I feel the same way about her as you do. I don't know how, if you guys have been together this long working in this field, how she can look so pretty and you're getting old like me.
Yeah. Well, she was a beauty queen, and I wasn't.
That has a little bit to do with it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's good to see you here. You still live out by Palmdale?
I live in Lancaster.
Lancaster, just by Palmdale.
Yeah, it's just north of Palmdale. Yeah, right. We still have, the Air Force aircraft coming low over our house. They're doing touch and goes from Air Force Plant 42 right there in Palmdale.
Mm-hmm.
We're flying out of Edwards Air Force Base.
Okay, well, you're still working on some things, right? And I know you're sworn to secrecy. A lot of these people, it's not really like the government. It's people, your sources, I guess. They just don't want to talk about it yet. Right?
Some of my sources have very sensitive information, and when they ask that I keep it either the information confidential or not to mention their names in particular, I honor their request. And in that particular way, they begin to trust me, and more information comes out. So this is something that I have been doing now in the past 15, 20 years.
Well, no, your reputation is impeccable as far as, you know, protecting people's sources and not spilling the beans, so to speak, without their permission. And we want to talk a little bit about, I can tell right now, I'm going to have to use a little radio interview techniques here to find out what you and Linda talked about. Can you give us a preview about what's coming up at all?
I'm beginning to see that there are some sources that are leaking new information. This information is now coming from sources along with photographs, documents, the likes of which I have never seen before. This is not just a verbal or written report from these particular sources. So it's a kind of, it's an elevated level of disclosure that's going on. And of course, on the other side of the fence, I have been seeing the critics. Even among the UFO researchers, the UFO believers, they have filed their complaints about information coming from unidentified from sources or sources whose background has not been thoroughly vetted. Mm-hmm. And I sympathize with this, and I understand this. Nevertheless, that does not mean that this information is disinformation. It does not mean that it is a hoax of any kind. It just means that we are accepting and receiving this information. We're evaluating it, analyzing it, making a study of it, and trying to authenticate it before it is released.
Now, you know, you caused a regular firestorm at the conference in Washington, D.C. last year. Is this in connection with this? Is this still some of the
no,
material?
No, this will be another firestorm.
Oh, good, okay. Firestorm 2.
Yeah, fact, I didn't even realize that
you probably didn't think that it was going to be as controversial as
I did not know that it was going to precipitate into debate that started over it, the allegations that were made, and then be followed up a little while later by allegations that were made on the Coast to Coast radio
show.
And by UFO Magazine. And so we went to work on this, and I did submit, and I went to a little bit more trouble, went down the road, acquired 3 notarized statements in support of our case. And the thing that I guess people don't hear is I did not take a definite stand, pro or con, on the particular case. I said it was an investigation that was in progress, and somehow that part of my statement
is lost, right?
Not heard, right? It's like, well, I concluded this. Well, I didn't conclude anything because these are difficult cases. This is not like investigating a sighting or a mass sighting or a crash retrieval case where you have multiple witnesses. This is a whistleblower case, and whistleblower cases have proven to be quite difficult and quite difficult to prove, and maybe I'm foolish for taking them on at all, except for the fact that the information they have to disclose seems to have a great deal of value. I mean, if you really get into it and correlate that information from independent sources, then you know there is something to it, something. How much of it is true and how much of it is false is unknown. But at least we made a record of it, we reported it. And future here, people are going to see more evidence, and it will be interesting to see what their reaction is to.
You know, one of the most interesting shows I've done in my entire 40-some-odd years in broadcasting was with you on the phone when, out of the blue, many years ago, you decided you'd just start talking about J-Rock.
Yes.
And grabbed my earphones and started listening. I said, hey, this is something, this is a big deal. And so on that, all of these things, you're really an expert on Area 51. I guess you've been out there more than anybody else.
Well, I don't know that I've been out there more than anybody else, but I started going out there before the Little Alien was called the Little Alien.
What was it called before that? A little trivia.
It was called the Rachel Bar and Grill.
Okay. Hey, great.
There was a broadcaster here in Las Vegas whose name was Billy Goodman.
Yeah, I used to work with Billy Goodman.
And Billy came on the air, and he said, you know, there's a mysterious place just north of here called Area 51. And I said, now he's onto something hot. And I called him.
Yeah,
I let him know that he needs to know something about this place. Well, I mean, one thing after another started to happen, and then he started those bus tours up there.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, I remember that. But we were on the same station at that time.
Right. Well, about that time, I took my own trip up there because I was interested in this mysterious caller who kept calling in.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yellow fruit.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And I said, who the heck is this
right.
guy?
Right?
So, I took a trip the long way. I came from California and went up through Ridgecrest. I went up through the border and I went over the mountains,
mm-hmm.
okay, into Nevada. And I remember it was like something like 3 o'clock in the morning. Dark, traveling highway that I thought was never going to end. And finally I saw a light in the distance. And I said, okay, I'll just go toward that light. And it was at the intersection of the highway that goes to Tonopah. I finally found that out when I got to this light, because it turned out that the light in the distance was a brothel. Open all night. That's why it was all lit up, right?
Uh-huh.
And I went, oh my goodness. You know, so I stopped for a minute and I went in and they had a bar where you could get coffee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, well, yeah, and all these girls come out.
Yeah, and you said, no, I just want a cup of coffee.
I said, I just want a cup of coffee. And they said, well, what are you doing out here? You know, and I'm said, I'm headed toward, I'm a UFO investigator. I'm headed toward Area 51. The place came apart at the seam. UFOs? Oh, we've seen UFOs out here. And here they delayed me another hour and a half or so talking about their UFO sighting. I mean, that was the strangest thing. So I left there, and I'm going by the Tonopah Test Range. Now it's maybe 4:30 in the morning. It's still dark.
Mm-hmm. 4:30 in the morning.
And I'm
so you got there, and it was called the
Rachel Bar and
Grill.
And when I arrived, it was maybe, now it was daybreak. And it was about 7 o'clock in the morning. And I looked up, and I found out they didn't open for breakfast until about 8:30. So I just sat in the car until they opened, and when I went in, I met Joe and Pat Travis. I told them why I was there, that I had, I was working on this book, the first book, Cosmic Top Secret, and I wanted to know if they knew who this yellow fruit character was, and if I could get a hold of him. And I gave her my card. And she says, well, you know, we do see him from time to time. And if he comes in here, I'll give him your card. And I thought, well, you know, nothing's going to come of this, right?
Yeah. So you left your card.
I left my card. Mm-hmm. When I returned home in about a week, my phone rings. And it's Yellow Fruit.
Wow.
He's calling me on my phone, right?
Uh-huh.
And so we had a long talk. I asked him a lot of questions. He was very mysterious. Eventually, I found out what his name was, where he lived, but it didn't settle the question for me. Did he really work out
at
Area 51 as part of the security team, right? And maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but by that time, Billy Goodman was doing bus tours out there. Bob Lazar was, his star was rising. I had learned about Bob's story 6 months before it broke from John Lear.
Billy Goodman actually just kind of fell into a lot of, opened the phone line. Right, and
exactly.
You got these things going. And actually a lot of these people really became infamous and famous together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. I don't know. Last time I talked to Billy, he was in Providence, Rhode Island. I don't even know if he's still alive.
I heard he was back east. I don't know.
Yeah, he's in Providence, Rhode Island. It was the last time I talked to him. In fact, it was on his show one day, just by phone, because I called up to talk to him. But that was an interesting time. That was, what, 87, 88, 89, somewhere like that?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And in fact, people were going out to the Highway 375 out there, now called the Extraterrestrial Highway. They were going out to what was called the Black Mailbox, Road right at that time. And I had spent a few nights out there myself when the temperature dropped to about 22 degrees at night. And because of the high elevation of the desert out there, it gets very cold at night. But quite a few people had sightings out there. And then, but I didn't have a sighting out there until 1993.
Wow, long time.
Yeah.
And what was that like? What did you see?
I saw something very strange. I was out there with, well, she was my fiance, my current wife, was with me, and I wanted to drive her out to meet Pat and Joe. And this was over... I was on vacation, and we were near St. Patrick's Day,
Okay,
but it was on March 16th, the day before. We had dinner at the Little Ailey Inn, and we decided to drive out to a spot that I spotted that was close to the mailbox road, but it was about 2 miles closer up the road, but it was a bare spot you could drive out into, and I had my Toyota pickup truck at that point. And as I was driving over the summit, Coyote Summit, I noticed one of the security vehicles from the test site was parked with its lights, dim lights on the other side of the road, and I just took note of it, and I kept driving. I got to the spot where I wanted to stop. We stopped. I drove out a little ways. And then the security vehicle that we saw, which was like one of the big Ford Broncos.
Yeah, right. I think that's what they had.
It came down from the summit. I watched it. And as it passed behind my truck, I took note of the time, and it was 8:30.
Okay, 8:30 in the evening.
8:30 in the evening. And both of us had very powerful binoculars, 10 by 50s, right? And so I said to my wife, I said, let's divide this up. You look off in this direction, and I'll look off more to the east, and she was looking off more to the west. And I said, if you see anything, and we saw vehicles that were moving down a dirt road in the distance, probably leaving and going back to the base, right? So we watched them, and I said, well, I thought I was looking for something in the sky, and I got out of the truck for a few minutes to look at the sky, and it was very, very cold. So I didn't stay out very long, and I saw it was partly cloudy. The stars were clear otherwise. I saw one aircraft in the distance, and I got back into the truck, and we were talking. We were just talking about Pat, Travis, and the little alien. Now, perhaps from 8:30, the time that the security vehicle passed behind my truck, is when we spotted something off to the southeast, maybe 10 to 15 miles away. There was a light in the mesquite. It was in the brush. And I said, what is that? Maybe that's that truck, that Bronco we saw over there.
Well, what wasn't the House of Prostitution, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah, okay.
This was out on just vacant desert.
The light
right?
wasn't
there. BLM land,
there,
right? Yeah.
Right.
So I'm looking at this light, and she's kind of looking around. So I'm saying that maybe the time elapsed was 15 or 20 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, hey, something strange is happening here, I said to Pamela, because there appears to be like a cone of light coming up, you know, shining toward the sky from where this object is positioned. And she could see that. So she started, you know, looking where I was looking with her binoculars, and suddenly something lifted right off the ground, and it looked like the shape of, if you were to look at a bus, right?
Okay.
The side of a bus with blue lit windows the whole length, right?
Okay.
And I'm looking at this, and suddenly my adrenaline is starting to speed up a little bit, right?
Right.
Or I know it's entering my system, and my pulse
well,
is
I can understand
increasing,
that. Yes,
right?
Yes, right.
So I said, keep an eye on it, because suddenly it became very bright. It changed form. It looked now like two bright orbs or headlights, one slightly larger than the other, and the intensity of the light started to increase, and it got brighter and brighter and brighter, so that I had to tell her, I said, I have to put these binoculars down. I'm afraid that it's like looking at the sun. It is so bright, it's hurting my eyes. I've never seen a light with that kind of candle power at night.
Intensely bright.
Intensely bright. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'm going to, I had fast film, 1200, I think, ASA 1200, in my camera, 35 millimeter camera. I reached behind my seat to grab it, and I said, keep an eye on this object. And as I did, the strap on the camera case snagged, so I had to take my eyes off of it and free the strap. And she said during that interval of time that it had changed form again and looked like a number of multicolored lights in an elliptical form, and they were rotating counterclockwise. By the time,
what do you think?
Again, it was in a position somewhere between 10 and 15 miles away. But when I turned back to look at it, and I had my camera now, it resolved back into two bright orbs. And at that point in time, it looked like it started to move directly toward my truck. And I went, holy cow, and I took my camera and I snapped the picture without even thinking of it. Well, the flash was on automatic, and of course the flash went off, which is not what I wanted, because it reflected off of all of the, you know, the glass, the mirrors, and everything inside the truck. Nevertheless, that photo still came out because of the intensity of the light source.
It overcame the flash. It was so
intense, you could see rays coming from the light source. So immediately I said, I'm getting out of the truck to take a picture so I wouldn't have glass in the way. And I went to exit the truck, and as soon as I exited the truck, I saw lights, but it was a car coming down the road. Now, I know that a car coming behind my truck and what I saw off the front hood of my truck were not the same thing.
So the object...
So I'm going, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like my brain jammed. In other words, this does not compute. This car, which turned out to be, looked like an older Pontiac, had these wide white wall tires. It looked like an anachronism.
Right.
And It passed right behind me, and
the
I
Men in Black with the suits on.
Well, the strange thing is, I couldn't hear the motor on the car.
Oh, really?
I could not even hear the tires on the pavement, and it was headed toward Coyote Summit, right? So I got my binoculars, and I'm looking at this car. The taillights are changing in intensity. I look at my watch, because then it occurred to me, I better take a time check. I looked at my watch. It's 9:15. I'm saying, 45 minutes could not have passed.
So you're missing time there.
And I'm going, this is strange. And then I watched this mysterious car stop halfway up the summit. And suddenly a bright light appears above the car. It makes no sense. I looked at Pamela and I said, let's get the hell out of here.
Right.
And I said, go back to our room at the Little Alien. Well, by the time we got back to the Little Alien, they were open maybe another 45 minutes to 1 hour. We told our story. That was it. We went to bed. At 1:17 in the morning, being fast asleep, having a dream, which I never have, a dream that I have very few nightmares. This was like a nightmare because it felt like I was on a table. There was a shadowy, tall, shadowy form leaning over me, and it looked like he had a pen light shining at my eyes. And as I opened my eyes from sleep, there was a green light that was on this VCR in the room, and the pen light became the VCR light, and suddenly I screamed. And then, of course, woke up Pamela, and she goes, what's going on? What's happening? And I said, we have to go back out there. She thought I was plumb crazy, right? I said, something happened out there, and we have to go back.
So you got up at 1:15 in the morning, or 1:17, and went back out there?
Yes. The upshot of the deal is, yes, there was missing time.
We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be right back to Bruce's story and let Bill go on his way. He's been nice enough to do it, but you can't leave it this way, Bill. We'll be back. This is Jerry Pippin. This is UFO Files.
You know, I've been long aware of the body's natural healing powers, and I have some information I'd like to share with you that I believe is paramount to each person's well-being. I want you to think about this. When you cut your hand, how does your body know how to heal the wound? The cells in our bodies are coded to perform many different complex functions that are all essential to our good health. Proper nutrition is the key. It gives our body's cells what they need to function properly. If we don't give the body all of the elements that it needs, the body creates substandard cells. After a period of time, cellular functions will start to falter. And according to scientific research, that's when diseases surface. Dr. Catherine Frisbee would like to share more of this information. Go to our website, jerrypippin.com, and click on the banner. That's the healthy food banner, and find out more information. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to UFO Files. In the background, you're hearing an actual recording of radio traffic of the security forces at Area 51. We're not far from there. We're in Las Vegas at the Sunset Station Casino. And we have with us Bill Hamilton, an expert, one of the foremost experts, really, on Area 51. And he was telling us quite a story about an encounter in Area 51. And when we left the story for the break, you were still in your hotel room, right? And it was 1:15 or 1:30 in the morning, or maybe later than that. It was early in the morning. Do I have the story right as we pick it up?
Yes,
with Pamela.
Right.
And she's a nice lady. I've talked to her on the phone.
Uh-huh.
And she's had abduction experiences, but we'll get into this one right now. Let's hear about this one.
Yeah, because I was always thinking, wait a minute, she's the abductee. Yeah, I'm the researcher. I don't get abducted. I don't have missing time, right? But this made me rethink, right? So we did, crazy as it seems, we got into our sweaters and our coats.
It's cold out there, huh?
And
even in March 16th,
I go all the way out there and I said, well, you know, I understand maybe we'll see something around 4 o'clock in the morning. So I said, that was my excuse for going back out there.
Oh, you made that up. You didn't know that.
No. I had heard reports early in the mornings.
Okay.
You could see something coming over the, what they called the jumbled hills, right? So I said, okay, we'll go back out there. And we did. And by golly, I'm out there, I turned off the engine, I fell asleep. She fell asleep. And I wake up and it's daybreak, right? The sun's coming up right over the eastern range. And so we went back and had some breakfast and I still don't know what happened. Well, I'm just going to shorten the story. I don't know really what to believe as to what happened. But eventually, we knew this lady who was getting her PhD in neuropsychology and learning hypnosis and under with a video camera to record it, we each went through recall.
Some regression.
And it was just like I reached this point where I got out of the truck and there was nothing, right? And then I kept going back through it and suddenly it was just like a screen was pulled aside and there was more to it. And, of course, that's the part you're uncertain about.
Right. We heard about screen memories. You can testify that such a thing happened.
Right. But it gave me an idea as to what might be occurring, what the missing time phenomena is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, just to shorten the story, is, yes, I recalled the lights approaching until they hovered about 50 feet in the air or less over my truck, and I was taken up.
Okay.
And there was one being aboard this craft, and he was tall. He was even taller than I am, maybe by an inch or two, but he still looked like very tall gray. Right, and it was like he was
big eyes and
right, okay. And he was like alarmed because he was monitoring signals. I guess his sensors were picking up signals, and he thought that I was about to have a heart attack.
Well, I can imagine so.
I mean, that's the impression I got from this being. And then we had some kind of an exchange. It's difficult to explain, except it's like his mind and my mind overlap. We share the same mental space. So he thinks something, and it's in my mind, I think something that's in his, and that's what appeared to be going on. That's the appearance of it. And
that's a good description. That's a little different than just mental telepathy.
Right. And I'm asking him, in effect, what are you doing here? And where did you come from, right? And he said he was there because he had a concern over an experiment going on. And he indicated the test site, an experiment with a time machine.
Mm.
And that they weren't, didn't, know fully what they were doing, and it was causing a problem that he was investigating, right? And I suddenly got the impression that the time we were in, and I was sharing this communication with him, was out of phase with our time. And this is why my brain, not, let's say time is a frequency, okay, and that my brain is tuned to this frequency, this world, and that's how I register everything, perception, memory, what have you, and consciousness, and that at his out of phase time rate was such that my brain wouldn't register it. And yet, at some level, let's call it subconscious, so that we don't have to get
technical,
well, or medical. Mystical about it, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But at some level, I the impressions, the memory impressions are still there. And it is hypnosis that is able to reach deep enough to retrieve them. But once they're retrieved, it's just like this thing unfolds before you like suddenly there's a motion picture going on right there, right? So there are a number of details that I remember, and I remember that I am on a table, that, and the whole table is like a biosensor. It's made of some kind of a semi-living material, and he can monitor all my vital signs, and they're displayed on what we would consider an electronic display of some kind. Yeah. Right? And but the whole thing revolved around this
experiment.
This experiment that was going on, and the reason why he was there, and that he himself was familiar with and capable of time travel as well as space travel, and that impressed me. That left an impression on me, whether this really is what happened or not, because of the fact that it was retrieved through hypnotic regression. I don't know, but it's fascinating. It got me thinking about the whole process and how it was an answer to some things, right? And that's what came out of that, and I put that in my book, Alien Magic.
This thing you had happen to you right outside Area 51 or inside or wherever it was.
Right.
Did you get the impression it was time travel that you went forward or backwards to, or was it just that
No, I went into a different time zone.
Okay. By that,
my impression is that we may be surrounded by an invisible world that vibrates at a different frequency than our world. But it's just as physical as this world, but it's out of phase with it. So, somehow, and this is still beyond my knowledge, but it is of extreme interest to me as far as physics is concerned, somehow he has the technology to traverse, you know, there's no distance to traverse, but emerge in our world from his world. He may not be from this invisible world adjacent to us, he may have traveled here to that world from space, but as I was made to understand, trying to interpret the thoughts that were given to me, like images.
William F. Hamilton.
It's his clock runs at a different rate than our clock.
Bill Hamilton and the... I think what you just told me was that maybe there's a little bit of truth in all of these theories we hear, these UFO shows. A little bit of interdimensional stuff, a little bit of time, some extraterrestrial, some intergalactic.
Well, you know, some of our best scientists are struggling just to understand how the universe works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every piece of the universe, and it appears now that the universe is like a giant computer that has been programmed with instruction sets, and it's processing this program, and we perceive the output, and in some ways participate in that process, our consciousness. And this is some kind of paradigm-shifting look at what our universe is all about. In fact, Scientific American recently published an article called "A Black Hole Computers," that where they previously thought that information that went into a black hole was completely lost and was irretrievable, now they think that black holes actually radiate, and that radiation carries that information back into our universe. Well, that's a magnificent idea, because that means no information is lost at all. And also the corresponding idea that life, as we know it, the origin of life, could be among the stars. You know, they have detected these small little grains in the infrared spectrum out there that they're... spectral signature closely matches only one thing that we know of, and that's bacteria, which means that bacteria are floating out there in the dust clouds of space, as well as most of the sugars. And we know that DNA, the ribose in DNA, means it's a type of sugar, right? And glucose and all of these things that can be found. And then we have amino acids that have been found out there, which are the basis of protein, right? All the essential ingredients, you might say, that you would find in the recipe for making life exist in space, in the stardust of space. And this stardust eventually condenses around newly born stars that are reincarnated from old stars that went nova. And these new stars will form what are called protoplanetary disks around them. And these protoplanetary disks, over millions and sometimes billions of years, will condense into planets, new planets. Well, as these planets condense out of the dust of space, we have what was present there already. All the ingredients for life. So they were already incorporated into the earth when it formed. So asking how life originated on earth isn't quite the right question. It originated before the earth formed and with the earth, so that it lay there dormant until bacteria.
Somebody already the soup up.
You know, bacteria are called what are called prokaryotes, right? They're simple organisms, but they carry DNA. They carry the universal instruction set, right? And what do? There is cyanobacteria that changed the atmosphere of Earth. They oxygenated it. They lived in an anaerobic environment. They oxygenated the Earth, and they made it potentially an abode friendly to life. And somewhere down the road, about 550 million years ago, came the Cambrian explosion, as evolutionary biologists talk about it, where all forms of multicellular, now eukaryotic type life exploded in all these different species. In fact, more species than even exist now. Some of them died off. They were like unsuccessful. Others were very successful. But it's even a mystery to this day as to how all of that happened. But this puzzle is now being assembled, and the scientists that are working in the advanced field of genetics, right? Earth,
yes,
themselves going through a paradigm shift, realizing that junk DNA is not junk at all, right? But that it has a function, the silent genes, right? or what they call the introns. They thought, well, only the other part of genes, the exons, are what code to build protein molecules, right? The thing is, when you look at all of this, and I'm a computer professional, I see it all as a code. I see that the whole, the complete universe is encoded with programs, and that is simply processing these programs, especially life. It is like this universe is fine-tuned to bring out life, to evolve.
It's always one of the reasons I enjoy talking to Bill Hamilton is we talk about these things that some people say, oh, that couldn't happen. Then you kind of just prove you know what your business is when you get into these little physics lectures. And I love it. I love it, Bill. Is there anything you can tell me about what you're working on at all?
Well, right now I'm working on a manuscript about time travel.
Okay.
And I start with the with what is known, what has been speculated in physics about time travel in Einstein's universe, right? And this is written about by others, scientists. I'm just an amateur scientist, but I'm a writer, and I've studied a lot of these things, and I'm going to pursue them even further. But what tells me that there might be something to time travel, that it really happens, okay, is the fact that people have reported these stories.
Yes.
These are only anecdotal stories, but there's too many of them, and they have correspondences. And these type of stories are called time slips. And it goes something like this. It started like, this came to people's attention when two school teachers way back in the 1800s, they came from England, they went to visit France, and they went to the palace at Versailles because they were interested in the times of Marie Antoinette and all of this, right? Well, they find themselves walking through the garden, and people are dressed and acting and behaving like they did at the time of Marie Antoinette. And they believe they even saw Marie Antoinette herself, right, or somebody looking exactly like her. And they had seen things, well, let's say they saw a building or a house that doesn't exist today, but once existed. But they saw it as if it existed. And it was a very strange experience, and the British Society for Psychical Research investigated their story. And at the time, it was like a singular story. But now, thanks to Fate Magazine and other paranormal investigators, a lot of people have come forward with similar stories where they seem to split back mostly to some past era, within the range of 50 to 100 years.
Well, we don't know how it happens, but I mean, they don't jump in a time elevator or something, or there's not a...
there's no time machine.
Right, and it's no, as far as you can tell, is it just a little bit like the barometric pressure goes crazy and all of a sudden you're 100 years back? I mean, how does that happen? Nobody knows, huh?
Right now, it's a mystery. But if I report it and other people report it, and we try to bring some attention to it, maybe it has some relevance. And maybe one day a scientist will come along and say, you know, I'm going to investigate this. Something's going on here. I want to find out how it's going on.
How do people get in touch with you these days? Or do you want them yet?
See, well, it's my
retirement.
They can get in touch with me by email. My primary email address is skywatcher22@hotmail.com.
Anything, I guess J-Rod's gone, he's dead, huh? You know?
I have no idea what the disposition of the J-Rod is, mm-hmm. or We don't know, no update information on that. I'm not going to presume he's dead yet, but.
Well, maybe I shouldn't jump to conclusions like that. He's getting up there in age, though, I would think, but maybe age is not important.
I think they have longer lifespans than we do, and hopefully, that is hopeful, because if that's true, then maybe someday we'll live a longer lifespan.
Yeah, that's right. You got to get a good point there. Still go out and watch the sky at night like you used to, or are you basically into theory and physics and things now, and a little heavier thinking?
I mean, obviously, it's
evolved. When I got in UFOs, I basically was thinking, well, you go out and you knock on it, and somebody comes to the door and lets you in. Well, there's more to it than that, isn't there?
Well, yes, and I used to do a lot of sky watching, and I don't do as much these days. But as far as UFOs are concerned, I'm interested in the knowledge behind the UFO, right? So, I would be more interested in sitting down and talking to one of these beings at some length with a recorder like that one over there and asking a lot of questions.
Well, when you do, I'd like to have the tape. Bill Hammond, it's always a pleasure. The Phoenix Lights Mystery and, of course, Cosmic Top Secret and Alien Magic is combined, and it's available no longer, thanks to technology, do books go out of print.
Right. And you can find it on Amazon.com.
Thanks very much, Bill. It's a pleasure meeting you in person. Tell Pamela hello, and we'll see you again soon. And
okay.
When you're ready to make this big announcement, let me know on what you and Linda are working on.
Okay, yeah, that'll come down the road.
Yeah, okay, thanks very much.
All right. Until next time, on behalf of our executive producer, Larry Dickin, our on-location producer, Roberta Scott, from Sunset Station Hotel and Casino here in Las Vegas, this is Jerry Pippen. Thanks for listening. Cheers.